This is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's mostly monthly live chat Christmas episode. Because it is the month of December in the year of 2022, and we are just 5 days until Christmas, but also to those of you who celebrate other things, happy Hanukkah and joyous solstice and all the other things. Happy all the other things. I actually had it in my head that I really wanted to be a little bit positive and upbeat tonight. So I'm going to start with something a little somber, but something that needs to be addressed. And I'm not going to drag this out because I would actually like to have a good time tonight. It was pointed out earlier in the day, without this being a personal accusation at me or anything else, that there has been quite a bit of negativity regarding D&D 5e. And even more specifically, all the crap around 1D&D / D-Box 1 / not 6th edition. And there's been a lot of news that has come out. There's a lot of muttering in the community. Most of it is like corporate crap, which, you know, I personally think bodes very ill for the upcoming edition. And I have my own personal reasons to worry about that. But I have been on a negativity kick for a couple of weeks now, and in fact, more to the point, I've actually been fairly negative for probably months now. And while I have moments of actual excitement and passion, the fact of the matter is, look, I'm just gonna say this. I'm sorry, I can't talk. Like, everybody's got their own opinions, and everybody is free to discuss whatever they want in the channel, as long as it doesn't violate, in the Discord channel, as long as it doesn't violate the things we have already, or the things I've already said in the pinned comments. That said, I'm aware that my own mood and interactions have been piss poor in general, and I sure as hell don't want to be the thing that is dragging down the community. I mean, the community is called the Angry GM's Discord, and I am the Angry GM. And if you can't expect a little bit of positivity from me, what the hell can you expect? The truth is, I have spent a lot of time dumping on things and being frustrated with things, and it is more motivated by personal things than by anything else. And I don't want to be there anymore. And so I'm just going to take this moment to say thank you to those of you who pointed it out both publicly and privately that I've been crapping on a lot of things and just been dragging the mood down in general. Your message has been heard and received. I will do my best. And also, please forgive me. Look, you know what? The other thing, real talk here. I love Christmas. I love the holidays. Anybody who's been paying attention to me knows that I really do love Christmas. And I mean, the other night we're posting pictures of our gingerbread cookies and all of that stuff. And I'm the sort of guy who runs around singing Christmas carols and all that crap. Okay, I love the holidays. This year, they're a little bit more stressful than most, and it's weighing on me a little bit. But also, it is very common for people to become a little stressed and worn out around the holidays and to feel a little mentally down. You know, because, you know, along with the holidays and all the stress that that may or may not entail, comes problems in the world that may be affecting people, and also the general idea of looking back on the year that was and on the year that is to come, and asking yourself if you're where you want to be and whether or not things will improve in the future and what you can do. It is really common to feel down at the holidays, and this is just a little bit of a public service announcement. If you feel that way, there is nothing wrong with you, and you are not alone, okay? And, you know, if you start to feel down about the things you love because you think they're going in a bad direction, that is also perfectly normal, and there is nothing wrong with that, and you are not alone. If you find yourself feeling really down and needing someone to reach out to, you know, there are, like, you know, number one, this community is here for everybody. So, you know, we're not, there's no therapy, there's no advice or anything here that is not allowed. But, you know, you're always welcome here to just vent your spleen a little. And then number two, if you find yourself really in trouble, there are crisis hotlines all over the country and I'm sure all over the world, though I can't speak for anything outside the United States. There is no shame in needing a little help or just struggling a little. And there is nothing wrong with saying that to someone, either a friend, a loved one, or a professional. Hey, I'm having a rough time and I just feel bad and I just want to be listened to. And if someone reaches out to you because they're having that, remember, the only things people really want in life is they want to be heard and they want to feel not alone. You don't have to say anything special. You don't have to fix their problems. You don't have to have advice. If someone you love comes to you and says, I'm having a hard time, all you have to say is, wow, it sounds like you are having a hard time. I'm sorry. Have a hug. So anyway, that's it. That's my PSA. Just know if you're in a similar boat right now, and there's a lot of reasons to be in a similar boat, you're normal. It's healthy. There you go. All right, that's it. Now, I don't want that to infest the whole episode, though, because, like I said, I do love the holidays, and I get very excited as the holidays are coming, and even despite the stress that I am feeling, I've been enjoying things, and so there's a couple of things I'm going to discuss just because I think they're funny, and then I will do the whole Q&A thing. So, of course, if you have any Qs or Cs, questions or comments, add them to the December Mostly Monthly Live Chat Q&A thread, and I will address them when I reach that point. But just a couple of things that have happened recently that I thought were particularly funny. My mother, who lives out, you know, my whole family is back in New York and I'm here in Wisconsin. My mother sent us this beautiful Lego gingerbread house, which of course I love Legos. I love assembling Legos. I've been collecting Lego sets ever since I was a little kid. And she found this Lego gingerbread house and it was really neat. She sent it and Allie and I promised to take time together to put it together and put it away in a closet and then totally forgot about it. So then my mother called the other day. And it turns out, in discussing it with her, we are not the only one she sent one of those Lego gingerbread houses to. She discovered them online and sent several out, including ones to my sisters and to me as well. And it turns out they're not really Legos. They are knockoff construction bricks that look almost like Legos from China. Okay. And apparently the other members of my family who tried to assemble this gingerbread house are giving my mother a little bit of crap about this. You know, they're cheap knockoff Legos. Oh my God, they're impossible. Nothing fits together right. And as she's talking about it, I mean, she takes it in good humor because that's my family. We're all sarcastic assholes who don't care about anybody else's feelings. So, you know, we give each other shit. But I felt bad, so I'm like, no, I'm sure it's fine. You know, we didn't start it yet, but I'm going to put it together. And that is when I pledged that, you know, I was going to get this thing together. So I set aside 2 hours on Sunday while Allie was making the gingerbread batter, and I unpacked it all. And this was going to be my pledge. I was going to put it together, and I was going to send a picture to my mom and say, see, it's beautiful, and I'm happy, and it's wonderful. Damn it, these things are impossible. I've put 6 hours into this thing yet, and I'm a third of the way through. Okay, so it's like 1,000 or 1,500 pieces, or something like that. A ridiculous number of pieces to begin with. And they are not sorted or organized in any way. Now, I'm an old school Lego guy, okay? I know that, you know, there was a time when they didn't put all the pieces in little numbered bags and tell you, okay, now just open number one because we don't want you to have to sort through too many pieces because that would be challenging for you. But, okay, even then, like, there's 10,000 tiny little pieces. They're all very generic pieces. Like, there's none of the fancy, like, you know, the custom Lego pieces or anything. And they're all packed together. There's 17 different colors, but actually there's only three different, well, wait, there's like four different hues. And then each hue has three or four different shades that are all very close together. So I looked at this mess and said, okay, the first thing I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to sort this all by color. So I broke out a dozen little Tupperware containers that Allie and I used to store our leftovers, sorted all of the pieces into all the different little colors and everything, you know. And I'm like, okay, now I got this nailed. Then we started going through the instruction book, and the instruction book is a quarter inch thick, and there are 160 some odd steps. And each of the step involves putting 30 pieces together. Then we discovered some other things about it, like the fact that there are misprints in the instructions, that some things are miscolored, or the colors are wrong, or there are just some missing pieces, or there was an appearance of missing pieces that turned out that the instructions were actually misprinted because they're the wrong color pieces, and there are some broken pieces, which I've never seen before, but they're Lego broken pieces. Not Legos, but they're broken pieces. Like, literally, there's just a bit snapped off of it. And you just make it do the best you can. So, and then on top of that, like, if you know Legos, you will know that Lego sets are actually very, very carefully designed. The design of the instructions of a Lego set is actually a bit of a work of art, because they are very careful when they invent sets, so that, number one, that whatever you get assembled is stable no matter what direction you put pressure on it, for the most part. So that, like, you can't, like, pick up the set and move it around to put a piece in place and then just crush it in your hand. Okay, they're very careful with how they have you cross-brace things and how many, you know, pieces you can stack together without, you know, attaching it to something nearby. Like, it's really elaborate engineering on these Lego sets. And then, two, there's never places where you'll have a piece that sort of floats because it's a really long piece and it's only stable in one spot, or it's only fixed in one spot. So it can't float around, and then you got to kind of jockey it in and wiggle it because you got a long piece that's got to lay across 10 different pieces. Things like this. Like, there's a lot of quality of life that goes into Lego set design that you do not realize until you try to assemble something that is a knockoff Lego set from China. So this has become a gigantic source of Christmas stress, because I made this pledge in my own heart that I would make my mother happy by getting this Lego set together before Christmas and sending her a picture and proving to her that it was a thoughtful gift that is appreciated, and all the rest of my family that gave her shit over it can go to hell. And, geez, I need another, like, at least 20 hours to get this thing done. And it's a nightmare, and I need help. So I thought that would amuse you all. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's just an estimate. Like I said, I have put 6 hours into it. I'm a third of the way through. Okay, so maybe 20 hours total. 6 hours, third of the way through. I'm hoping it gets easier as I have worked through most of the pieces, but yeah. Yeah, Nitsu is saying, no, there is no Christmas gift that says, no Christmas gift like one that says the rest of the family are jerks, Mom. It was a very thoughtful gift. You know how mothers are. Anyway. So, meanwhile, speaking of Christmas things, I learned something today. And this is just going to be in my particular wheelhouse. And this is just fun little stories to brighten the holiday a little bit. I have long had a theory. There is a Christmas carol, and I love Christmas carols. And as I recently illustrated by Well actually-ing the hell out of General Chat, I am very into the origins of Christmas traditions, Christmas stories, and whatever. You know, like, look, I seriously, when it comes to Christmas, I'm the guy in the Hallmark Christmas special. Okay, in every Hallmark Christmas movie, there is the overworked, stressed out girl who ends up, you know, in a fish out of water situation, and she, you know, she's struggling and she doesn't like Christmas and she's down. And then along comes the guy that is just brimming with Christmas spirit and then shows her, you know, everything. And then she has love and she's happy and yay. And then it's the ending. That's me. Like, I was born to play the male lead in a Hallmark Christmas special. So anyway, Winter Wonderland. Okay, this is a Christmas, an old staple of A Christmas Carol. And I have long had a theory, and I hate the phrase theory, by the way, but because everybody uses it online to say, in my opinion, right? Like everybody, when you say, I have this theory that what classes are really about is this. And it's like, that's not a theory. It's not based on anything other than, you know, you think this thing is true. And instead of saying, hey, you know what I think, you say, I have a theory to give it this air of legitimacy and objectivity. But nonetheless, I've had this theory that Winter Wonderland is actually about an engaged couple working through the stress of being engaged. And this is long before I got engaged earlier this year. Zoot is saying, and she ends up dumping her amazingly calm, supportive boyfriend who's like about to score the business deal that'll let them retire at 20. The guy is never calm and supportive. Okay? The guy is... No, never mind. I'm not getting into this. Okay. He's never the right guy. He's not never the right guy for her. Anyway, so there's the bridge or the lyrics in Winter Wonderland that's, you know, in the meadow we can build a snowman that we'll pretend that he's Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man. You can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we've made walking in a winter wonderland. So it's this romantic song. This couple is they're planning their future together, right? And then there comes the neck, and I have always said, you know what, I bet this song is really about this couple the planning their future together. That's what, you know, facing unafraid the plans that they've made with regards to getting married and, you know, all the changes in life and everything. Okay, fine. But then comes that other verse, the one about building a snowman and pretending he's a clown and getting into a snowball fight with the other kids. And it's completely nonsensical. And that has always blown my mind. Well, finally, after many years, I looked it up because I was friggin' curious what was really going on. And it turns out the original song written in 1934 included only the verse about the pretending that the snowman was a priest. And sure enough, it was written as a little romantic ditty about a couple planning their future together. Someone else came along a few years later and decided to do a kiddie version of it, where they basically changed the lyrics. And so instead of it being about a priest and getting married and all of that stuff, they instead, we're not talking Kidz Bop because, you know, this is still back in the, I think it was, this all happened between the 30s and the 40s, right? The 30s and the 50s. And so then this other version came with the circus clown and snowball fights and just playing in the snow. And it was a more kid-friendly version of the song. Whoever it was that made the song a standard, and now I have to look this up again, but whoever it was that actually made the song a standard, you know, who recorded the definitive version, neither version, I guess it was Bing Crosby probably, but neither version was long enough. So he just took the two different versions and crammed them together as two different verses of the same song. And that is why it is now this disjointed, complete lack of a narrative. So there you go. And this is what happens when you just cram together two different thematic elements without any thought for what you're doing, right? And thus was born 5E. Hey, now, we have to be positive, right? I got yelled at. I have to be positive. So meanwhile, because I'm still waiting for questions to pop, I only have one question and I don't want to deal with it. I will answer it, but I'm doing delaying tactics. But I don't have any questions or comments in the mostly monthly live chat thread yet, so I'm going to have to keep talking for a bit. One other little thing. So I was in a game store the other night looking for a board game. For one of the tiny Epic games to send to some family members back home. And it is a tradition that, you know, in our stockings on Christmas morning, Tiny and I give each other a brand new dice set. You know, just one, like, we don't need more dice. We're gamers. The one thing we don't need is dice. Plus, you know, I don't need dice. I don't run games online. So, yeah, I only run games online now. So I have no live games, but anyway, so I saw these dice and if you were at NonCon or heard any chats about it, you'll know that Tiny, did a dice inking thing. Okay. And what that means is, like, you used to be able to get dice, that the letters or the numbers were not inked. Okay. And so then you could get paint pens and color in the numbers yourself. And most commonly, they were sold by a specific company called Game Science. Because Game Science manufactured their dice in a very particular way to make sure that they were actually truly random. Because the process of making dice, the way dice are made, makes them really... I mean, they're just a mess, right? I mean, the dice are just not at all truly random. Not that it friggin' matters, because there's not a cash prize in D&D. Like, there was a time when everybody was making a big deal over, you know, checking your dice to make sure that they're properly balanced and not weighted or biased or whatever. It's like, who cares? It's just pretend elves, and there's nothing riding on this. But anyway, so she did a dice inking thing, and she loved dice inking, but Game Science went out of business. And, or not really out of business. He sold the business and they're still doing some stuff, but they're not doing anything. But anyway, it's really hard to get, uninked dice now. And she really enjoyed inking dice. We found a bucket of uninked dice that we brought down to NonCon and then we gave the rest away. And that was like, that bucket was like $50 or $60 or something like that. It was an insane amount of money just for these uninked, you know, somewhat irregular dice, to be honest. But anyway, I think it was $75. I think we spent $75 for a bucket of uninked dice for that. Anyway, doesn't matter. So I'm in the game store and I'm looking at all of the dice because, you know, in game stores, they put the dice where they would put the candy in a grocery store, right there as an impulse buy by the register. So as I'm checking things out, I notice these dice, and this one package of dice is a full set of really nice clear dice, though they have the sharp edges that indicate they weren't tumbled, and they have no numbers on them, but there is a thing that looks like a pen in there, and I'm like, holy crap, a set of dice that is uninked that comes with its own paint pen, perfect for Tiny. And I picked them up and I say, you know what? I'll take these too. I have someone who will love these. And the girl looks at me and she says, well, you know what they are, right? I'm like, yeah, aren't they uninked dice that you can ink with that pen? She says, no, that is not what they are. They are special dice that have been inked with black light ink so that although you cannot see the numbers on the dice in normal light, if you then take the little black light pen flashlight that is included, you can squeeze it and shine it on the dice and find out what the number is. Because that is what the dice rolling process needs, is after you have rolled the dice, you have to take your tiny little pen light out of your pocket and shine it on the die to try and read the number that's on there. This is what's happening now. Like, I mean, this is beyond the dice with one weird symbol that might be on the highest side or might be on the lowest side. Hold on a second. I have to excommunicate something for literally saying the stupidest thing a human being could say right now. Whoops, that's banned from lightning rounds, though that counts too. Where is excommunicated? Okay. Somebody in the chat just said this is a thing that would benefit their game. Well, they are now excommunicated. Right? Okay. Like, and the thing, like, when you have the clear dice with the things embedded in them so that you cannot read them, or the things that are written in these crazy fonts so that you can't read them from across the table. It's like, what the hell is going on with the dice industry? Dice are supposed to do one thing, generate a random number that can quickly and easily be read for the purpose of playing Dungeons and Dragons. Anyway. Oh, it looks like we have some questions and comments from the live chat thread now. Zudish is claiming that they forgot the goblin, the sarcasm goblin on their post. Yeah, I don't think so. I do not believe you. So now I'm going to switch over to the live chat Q&A thread for the remaining portion of this night. And let us see. Arthur the Amethyst is asking, what are you excited for in 2023? There are numerous things I'm excited for that I can't talk about or don't want to talk about and don't want to make promise. No, the wedding is 2024. Tentatively. Okay, I'll say that. Tentatively, Tiny and I are trying to make it happen in spring of 2024. But a lot of that's going to depend on 2023. Okay. One of the things I've slated for 2023 is actually related to how I started this whole conversation. And that is my own... I'm feeling both very negative toward gaming in general and very lost in terms of what the hell I'm trying to do. Not just in terms of eventually publishing a role-playing game of my own, but just in terms of, you know, what is the Angry GM about at this point and what kind of stuff can I offer? And I've talked about this off and on a little bit. I have a plan to kind of, you know, up my own game a bit, but also to kind of get back to what I think are my real strengths. And I am really excited to implement that. It is fully my intention to sell the Tension Dice and to also publish the sequel to Game Angry with a republication of the original and a republication and revision of the original, packaged with that project. So I am excited to do both of those. And I don't want to push you to support these things if you don't think they're things that'll be useful for you. But at the same time, you know, they need to pay for a wedding. So, you know, if it's not for me, it's for Tiny at this point. Support my Kickstarter. No, I kid. But seriously, I'm excited for those. And also those of you who are involved in Smaffard speculation know that there is going to be a drastic change to how Smaffarge is being designed and developed. The most drastic change of which is Smaffarge speculation is Smaffarge itself, right? Not the speculation. Smaffarge itself is moving from the, you know, here's my giant pile of things that I would do if I was making a role-playing game, which now have filled an entire longhand, handwritten, leather-bound journal. And instead, it is going to enter the phase of actually building the damned game, which it should have done 2 years ago. But, you know. So those are the things I'm excited for in 2023 on the Angry GM side. I have some personal things I'm excited for. I am both excited and daunted also for the fact that I am starting a new campaign. I'm starting a new campaign in January. It's going to be online too, so I will now be running two games again. The second game is replacing a campaign that I completely destroyed and ran into the ground in just a couple of months because I screwed literally everything up. It was a complete disaster. And the only difficult thing is with January fast approaching and me really wanting to get this started, apart from one logistics element I have to work out, I also have no idea what the hell I want to do with it. But after conversations I've had in the Discord, there's like 10,000 things I want to do with it. And I have a bad feeling that a lot of them will not make the players involved happy, because I know what some of the players involved want, and it is exactly the sort of stuff that I want to move away from. I'm also excited to increase the regularity of my other campaign, because it's been... I am super inconsistent and irresponsible. I shouldn't say irresponsible. I've been super inconsistent, partly for matters beyond my own control, and that is a big resolution, a New Year's resolution of mine to make good on the promises and commitments I have made and stop screwing that shit up. Okay, Zudashugan. Will we see crafting again in 2023? I really want to, yeah. Some form of crafting has to happen. But I also have this bad feeling that I may have been barking up the wrong tree with my crafting system, and all the work I did may have been for naught, and I think crafting would benefit from a more simple system. At some point, crafting has to happen, because crafting is actually for something that is like vital to. I guess vital to is a good phrase. Crafting is sort of vital to the whole concept of town mode. Integral, not integral. Okay, it's not the area under the curve of town mode. It is integral. It must be integrated. Okay, thank you, Flock of Panthers. Crafting is sort of integral to the Crafting is necessary for town mode for reasons. Arky, how do other angry religions react? How do other angry religions react to other religions having access to divine magic? Well, only certain religions have access to divine magic, first of all. And second of all, it varies by practitioner and religion. Stu, any news or progress you can share about the international NDAs? The hardest part about this whole... This is referring to the fact that I am going... Anybody who wants to participate in SMAFARG speculation is going to have to sign an NDA going forward to be a part of my super secret SMAFARG community. And the thing is, international fans are making this whole process complicated because, you know, international contract law is a lot, it has a lot more picky bits than just, you know, American contract law. And even then, we've got 50 different versions of contract law here in America, depending on what state you're in. But nonetheless, look, the real talk is this. I do not want to exclude anybody from the SMAFARG community. I'm going to say this. Insofar as anybody is going to be invited into the super secret SMAFARG club, everybody will be. Okay? It's going to be an all or nothing. If I can't get international people into it, then I'm going to find some other thing to do with it. It's kind of hard to, like, trying to do this around the holidays was the worst time, but actually, I wasn't actually planning to have the NDA issue settled until mid-January, which is the date I set. So the SMAFARG speculation channel is going to go away on December 31st at midnight or thereabouts, and then the new club will not open until the 20th, giving me 3 weeks to resolve the situation if it's not resolved before the end of the year. October Foundry, what New Year's resolutions do you have for 2023? I kind of covered some of these already. One of it is just being irresponsible with the promises I made with people, and that's not great. That includes promises to members of the community, promises to my friends, promises to my, you know, my players. There's a lot of stuff that I just haven't really delivered on. And the thing is, it's not because I'm careless. It's not because I don't care or anything else. It is that I allow life to give me excuses and then don't do, like, I don't know how else to say it. I've become very bad about keeping my promises and my commitments. And that's not good. And I don't want to do that anymore. I have also not been taking care of myself physically or mentally the way I used to. And that is probably the reason for a lot of my down feelings. But nonetheless, so that's something that, and actually it's not really a New Year's resolution because I have started working on it this very week because I decided that it's a lot easier to continue habits than it is to start new ones. So if they are already, you know, if the best of my personal care habits are already in place by January 1st, then I'm just maintaining habits. I'm not changing everything. You know, I will say this, okay? There is a contingent of people who are very down on the concept of New Year's resolutions, and you are very likely to fail a New Year's resolution, okay? Which people use that as a, like, there's no point in making resolutions because most people don't keep their resolutions anyway. And it's like, well, that's not really the lesson to take from that. The lesson to take is that if you identify something that you need to change, the idea that deciding to change is actually gonna change anything, it's a myth. Okay, the decision to change is very, very hard. It's the hardest, easiest part you're gonna face. And after that, you have to struggle every day. And you're gonna backslide, but, you know, you have to keep at it. And then there's this whole thing with actually making personal changes in life. There's a whole thing to it and how your mental energy changes at different stages of the at different stages of the process. Okay. So, you know, also people will point out that there's nothing special about January 1st or December 31st or New Year's. It's just a changing of the calendar. And it's like, well, you know what though? There is actually something special about it. Because no matter what you say, most people do sit and reflect at the end of the year because we call it New Year's. And that just puts you in the mindset of reflecting and saying, am I happy where I am and what can I change? Okay. There's a reason most people do make New Year's resolutions, even if they fail at them. The reason they fail at them is because change is hard and most people can't do it. Like, that's the sad truth, is change is extremely hard, and it's one of the most challenging things you're going to do. The reason most people make them is because New Year's is thematically, it's a liminal time, right? It's a liminal space. It's the transition from one period of life to the next. And it does, you can sit there and say, well, it's not important and I'm just going to fail, so I'm not going to make changes anyway. And it's like, is that the attitude that you want to carry forward? Because if that's the attitude you have toward the opportunity to reflect and change on New Year's, are you going to, isn't that just your attitude toward life in general then? And is that the attitude that will get you where you want to be? So anyway, I believe in New Year's resolutions. I have like 50-50 success rates on New Year's resolutions. But fortunately right now, I'm not trying to make any changes I haven't already made in my life. I'm just trying to fix things I've lost control of, because after you have changed, you are still fighting to make that change for the entire rest of your life. You do not make changes, you adopt new lifestyles. Anyway, not life advice though. Wiley, for a Christmas theme, what annual holidays take place in the Angryverse? You know, I don't know. I can name a couple of holidays that have taken place in the Angryverse. But, like, okay, so there is, I can't even remember what it's called. Because it's honestly, it hasn't come up in one of my games since I was running 4th edition, and it was called Raven's Watch after the Raven Queen, who is not a god in the Angryverse anymore, but she sure used to be, except technically she wasn't a god, but she was. But anyway, that was, it took place, it was like the last night of the year, it was actually the New Year's celebration, come to think about it, Raven's Watch. And the idea was you lit candles and reflected on those who had been lost in years past and remembered them, because there is a fear that if a soul is wandering in the afterlife and hasn't moved on yet and it gets forgotten, it will fade away. You know, there's a remembrance of the dead aspect there, which is very important. The other one is... So there was the Harbinger's appearance, but that happens every 10 years. And I only remember that one because it came up very recently in my games. But, you know, in general, like, look, there's all the normal festivals. There's a Midsummer Festival. There's, you know, there's harvest festivals. There's solstice. You know, all of the normal things are celebrated. Right? Because, I mean, that's most holidays, you know, are either religious observances, which have been connected to past celestial events, or they are just raw celestial events. So I have a celestial, so there are celestial events, and therefore there's all sorts of ceremonies. The thing is, these don't really come up in the game very often. You know, when they do, sometimes they are plot points, but mostly they are just backdrops. And so that's it. So I can't list the holidays. I don't list, it's like a holiday doesn't get added to the calendar until it's been celebrated at the table. And for the most part, it just doesn't happen. And, you know, every so often I get to, how do you handle festivals and tournaments and all this stuff? And it's like, you know, the same way I handle absolutely everything else in my game. I describe what's going on. I ask the players what they do. And then they take actions and I resolve it. Okay. So, Wiley, how many in-game months or years take place during a typical 50-session campaign for you? About a year and a half. Oh, in-game months or years. Sorry. In-game months or years. It depends really heavily on the campaign. So I have had campaigns where across 50 sessions that have been about 2 years of in-world play, I have had games where across 50 sessions it has been 3 months. It depends on the entire campaign. Typical 50-session campaign. I'm going to remind everybody the Q&A thing is for questions or comments that require a response. If you want to make remarks about somebody else's question or comment, use the live chat text channel for that. Thank you. Stu is asking my favorite British demon, because there's a U in favorite. Barlgura, probably. I don't know why. I like the Barlgura. Next question. Okay, but seriously, okay, the Barlgura is basically, that's a big gorilla demon, right? It's the big punchy gorilla monster. It's Donkey Kong the demon. I like it almost entirely because the miniature sculpt and the artwork for the Barlgura in 4th edition was awesome. I guess Vrocks are kind of cool too. Those are the vulture demons. You're saying demons, not devil. I gotta be honest, I don't use demons as much as devils. I find demons way boring compared to devils. Demons were more interesting in 4th edition because they were evil elementals and not just, you know, destructive evil. But I find demons dull compared to devils. So, yeah. When young, did you play any of the classic module series? Did any stand out? No, I did not actually really run any of the any published modules whatsoever. You know, once I pretty much, so I, you know, I started with the Mensa Red Box. I think I've told that story, and I used the material that was in there. And pretty much at that point, I started building my own dungeons, and then I switched to AD&D 2nd Edition, and then I was just writing my own homebrew stuff pretty much forever after. Occasionally, I would pull something out of Dungeon Magazine, but I never read any, or I never ran any of the classic, I never read any of the classic, or I never ran any of the classic modules. I did read some of them. Like Isle of Dread came with the Mensa Blue Box, the expert set. I shouldn't call it the Blue Box, the Mensa expert set. And that was a cool module, but I never ran it. And plus, you know, like Jungle Island with like, you know, spider people and dinosaurs and shit was not D&D to me anyway. Procillus, favorite American devil. Oh man. See, I shouldn't have set myself up because that is tough. Like I have a couple of difference. It depends on what. Okay. I really like Chitin, the chain devils, and I don't know why, other than just the imagery of like the enshrouded devil that is wrapped in chains because it is, you know, basically bound by its own sin kind of a thing. That is a really awesome image. Plus anything that fights with whippy chains is just cool. And I mean, obviously, for some reason, I really like Spined Devils too. If we go into more modern incarnations, I don't know. Spined Devils, you know why? Because they're so classic. Like the Spined Devil is just like that classic looking semi gargoyle from hell kind of devil. They're a great thing to just bring out. Because they, nothing like that says devil like the Spined Devil. And one of the problems with all of the wacky monsters that now infest D&D with all the aberrations and all the this and all the that is now when you describe something to someone, they have no idea if they're facing a demon, a devil, an aberration, or if this is just some weird creature that lives in this world. And that really pisses me off. Okay, when people are fighting a devil, I want them to know they're fighting a devil and not think like, well, is this Cthulhu? Is this just another sentient humanoid from some weird race that we haven't met? You know, like, man, like all the thematic breakdown between the different creature types is just one of the many, many, many things that is just lost now. So anyway, so I like the Spine Devil because there is no mistaking it for anything but a devil. You know, obviously your Pit Fiends or your Balrogs or whichever, or the Balor. I can't remember whether it's the Pit Fiend or the Balor. The devil is the Balor, right? Yeah. Okay. So the devil one is the Balor. And anyway, you know, the Balor, everybody knows that they're fighting a devil. But, you know. Do people even worship demons in the Angryverse? You've made a lot of content that describes how devils work, but very few words on demons, so I'm curious how you tend to use them. Demons are a force of destruction, pure and simple. Okay? Demons are destruction incarnate. Okay? They despise the cosmos and want to see it torn apart, torn asunder. The only people who would worship such things are crazy people. Okay, because demons are anathema to existence. I'm not saying there are not crazy people, but also demons in the Angryverse are not really given over to cunning. They are not given over to trickery or deception or long-term plans. They are basically just creatures from the abyss that are attempting to drag everything down into destruction. So no, like, in general, things do not, things don't, like, worship demons. There are a few races that have sort of been tricked into worshiping demons because destruction is sort of their thing anyway. Like, recently one of my parties in one of my campaigns ran into Sahuagin. Okay, and the Sahuagin religion is based on the idea that eventually the world will be drowned in blood, so that, you know, and the Sahuagin will be the only things that can survive, because once you flood the world with blood, only things that like swimming in blood will be happy. So the Sahuagin, they do not know that they worship a demon. They worship what they think is a god, but that is not a god. It is a demon. Maybe. I can't really reveal the truth, because that would reveal some deep, deep secrets about religion. And one of the things, like, people keep asking me for details about the religion. And the point that these questions keep coming up is that these questions keep coming up. And that's why it feels like such a complete religious idea, is that it doesn't quite fit together. And there are questions and everything is not explained. And, you know, some of it you just kind of have to accept. And even there's a sense that Angry doesn't really know how all of it works, even though maybe I do. So I can't give away everything because my players listen, but yeah, are there things that do sometimes end up worshiping demons? Yeah, but only because they are creatures that are basically anathema to anything but their own existence anyway, and they have somehow convinced themselves that they are the one thing that will be spared. And so that's, they're sort of, they become useful idiots for demons. They keep feeding demons blood. Demons are happy with blood. Therefore, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship, you know, until the revolution comes and then the Sahuagin are up against the wall like everybody else. Let's see. What is the best Christmas adventure you've run? I don't run holiday adventures. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be mean. October Foundry is asking, what is the best Christmas adventure you've run? I don't run thematic adventures. Okay, I've never run a Christmas adventure. Christmas is a uniquely real world thing. I could run a holiday adventure and, you know, do the themes of things that would make it a holiday adventure. I really don't. The last time I ran a Christmas adventure was a year ago at this time. I ran a Christmas-themed paranoia game, which was literally several different secret societies in paranoia were spreading Christmas. And of course, the computer, realizing that this idea of, this gift-giving person that gives gifts equally to everybody was obviously a communist plot. And sent the troubleshooters to destroy, the idea for that was I wanted to run a paranoia adventure in which the players were the Grinch and it was their job to steal Christmas. And so I guess that counts. And that's the last Christmas adventure I can remember ever running. I don't know, what's my time there, Mr. Producer? Because I think I'm getting close to the wire. I have something I need to end on. 53 minutes on my timer. So, go gadget clock, 8 minutes, okay. All right. So, here's the thing. In the interest of, I want to end this with actually a call to action. I never ever do this, and like my social media marketing books tell me I should be doing it more. Not that I read social media marketing books. But anyway, so I want to end this with a call to action, okay, to engage all of you. You know what, now I'm making it sound cynical, but it's really not. Like I said, I've been feeling a little negative and a little bit down, and I know some other people have been feeling a little negative and a little bit down, but also it was pointed out that, I think Arthur pointed it out, and a few other people have said it quietly in other places, that one of the most positive aspects of gaming right now is being a part of this community, which I take zero credit for because I consider myself to be the anchor that drags this community down and not the the cult personality figure around which this community organizes itself. So like everybody else makes this really popular, but nonetheless, okay. I want everybody to take a moment. Like when this goes, this is going to go into, this is going to get posted onto the, you know, as a podcast episode on my website in a couple of days. It might not be till after Christmas, depending on when it can be remastered, but whatever. When I do that, whether you're listening now or recording, take a moment and think back on this past year in gaming. And it doesn't have to be just angry community. This past year in gaming in general. What's the best memory you've got? What's the most positive thing that happened in your gaming memory this year? Okay, you know, just post that in the comment. Tell everybody else. Spread your own little bit of positivity. Tell people what you've enjoyed about the gaming year. Okay? Let's do that. And I'm going to do mine right now. Okay? First of all, my personal moment was, of course, getting engaged to Tiny. And that also counts as a gaming moment because we went to a castle that had a board game library. But also, my best gaming moment was having 35 people show up at a hotel in Ohio for 2 days just to play games with each other. And everybody who showed up was just like, they were all, like, you were all the most awesome people in the world. So NonCon was, you know, I'm not cheating here because this isn't a thing I made happen so much as a thing that was amazing because of all the people who showed up and all the GMs and all the players and everyone. So yeah, that was definitely top of the list. We already have plans for next year. Yeah, NonCon was an expensive jaunt, and I'm gonna have to see where Angry Games is on whether or not I can make that happen again this year. It may have to wait till the following year, but we'll see what happens. But anyway, do that. Post your good memory from the year. Reflect back, find something positive, find a reason why you're still in the gaming community. That sounded bad too. I'm babbling now because I never know how to sign off. Anyway, that's it. Like, and no, not in the channel. October Foundry is asking which channel. When this recording gets posted on my website as a podcast episode, you can comment on it. So comment on it right then and there and just leave a comment so that everybody can read everybody's comments, even the people who don't get to play in the Discord but still get to listen to the recordings. Yeah, just post a little, hey, my best gaming memory was of the year. So, yeah, let's do that. All right, meanwhile, I do want to thank everybody. It has been a difficult year. I'm getting a time warning now. But I do want to thank absolutely everybody for everything this year. It has been a year of transition. It has been a difficult year on the angry side. And you have made it survivable, manageable, and worth fighting through. And I really want to get back to where I was at the beginning of the year, because I was a lot more reliable and I was putting out a lot stronger content at the beginning of the year. Because I want to be worthy of the, you know, of the encouragement and of the support and of everything you all do for me. I want to be worthy of this community. I want to basically keep earning everybody's love, I guess, every day. And I've been lax on that at times, and I really appreciate everybody's understanding for that, but that's it. Thanks, everyone, for the support, the encouragement, for reading, listening, hanging out, coming to NonCon, putting up with me at my best and worst. And I wish everybody, you know, happy Christmas, happy Hanukkah, happy solstice, happy Kwanzaa, whatever it is you celebrate, or if you celebrate nothing other than just, you know, chilling out at the end of the year, or even if you don't have time to do that, you know, I hope you find some time to at least find a little bit of joy in the moment, look back on the year, and find the good moments. All right, that's it. I'm done. I'm out.